I mean, a lot of people ask who are starting off drawing, and I'm sure you get this maybe with comedy and jokes too. People say, well, how do I develop my own style, mm-hmm. right? Like, well, first you copy a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
You just do everything, just riff off of everybody. But then, like, I ask them, how do you figure out your handwriting? Like, you just did it, right? You just wrote, and you just kept writing and writing and writing, and eventually you created a handwriting that nobody else's handwriting looks like.
We are back with a new episode of Working It Out. That's the voice of Wendy McNaughton. She is possibly my favorite artist, visual artist, on the face of the earth. You probably know her work. She drew all the pictures in Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, which is like this book that sold a zillion copies. It's incredible. She did the Old Man in the Pool artwork with Jen, my wife Jen's photograph of me in the pool. That super cool thing. She did the new one book cover along with Crystal Saka. For a period of time, she was a journalist slash artist for the New York Times. So she would do these really fascinating drawings of real people, including, and we talk about today, in Guantanamo Bay. She drew the trials in Guantanamo Bay. They're astonishing. As a matter of fact, you should consider following along. Just, you know, Google Guantanamo Bay, Wendy McNaughton, New York Times. You'll see these incredible, incredible drawings. She's just like a one-of-a-kind artist. And we talk a lot today about the relationship between visual art and comedy and joke writing and all kinds of art and how they're sort of all interrelated. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention she has an incredible series for kids called Draw Together. And Una loves it. I know tons of kids who love this series. You can see them on YouTube. You can go to her site, which is drawtogether.studio, which has a nonprofit component with video supplies for underfunded art programs. And she's phenomenal. She's at Wendy Mack on Instagram. And she was in town for the Broadway show. And that's why we recorded this. The show is up and running, which is why we've had reruns the last couple weeks. I've just been so busy with it. But it's so fun. We're doing 8 shows a week at Lincoln Center, Vivian Beaumont Theater. It's The Old Man and the Pool. If you want tickets, go to mikeonbroadway.com or go to this site or app called TodayTix. That seems to be the least expensive way to get tickets, and I keep sending people there because there's just a lot of good deals on there. I think you're going to love this conversation. It's a one of a kind conversation. We've never had a strictly visual artist on before, and so I'm going to send you to Instagram and TikTok to check out some of the videos of this stuff because it's visually, it's really cool, and at one point, it's not on the audio, but she teaches me how to draw, which I think will end up being a video too. Enjoy my conversation with the great Wendy McNaughton. We were talking the other day about how sometimes art scales and sometimes it doesn't scale. Like, so sometimes you'll make something, because art's so personal, you do it alone in a room or alone in a park or alone whatever.
Right.
And then sometimes it ends up like with your book with Samin, Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, in a million homes.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
And then sometimes it's just in your notebook, right?
Right. And I don't think if you think, like if, I don't know how this is with you, with what you do, but if I start thinking about where something's going to end up, like when I'm actually making it, that's a really surefire way to fuck it up.
That's a loser strategy.
Kind of doesn't work.
John Mulaney and I talk about that sometimes with jokes. If you imagine a laugh, mm-hmm. there will not be a laugh.
Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Similar.
Yeah, and I think that, I think some people, but everybody works differently, like visually speaking. I don't know anything about comedy or anything about anything really, but I know like a little bit about drawing and how different artists work. And there are some people who think about how they want things to look, like yeah. when it's, they plan it out. They do a sketch,
right.
and then they do like 3 sketches, and then they do a final, and then they tweak it, and then it's done. But I don't know where a drawing is going when I start. Yeah. Like, I might have an idea of what I want to do, but then, like, once the pencil or pen is down on the page or the paint or whatever, it goes in a totally different direction. So I don't know how somebody would, like, as you say, like, try and tell a, you know, think a joke is funny and then like tell that. Like, I don't think I could try and do a good drawing and it turn out well. Like, it just kind of do what's in
That's why art and commerce have a challenging dynamic.
Say more.
Because, like, in other words, like, I'm always reluctant, like, you're my friend, but I'm always reluctant to ask my friends to work on something for a few reasons. One is I don't want to offend them in some business way of like, I'm bigger than that. I wouldn't do it. Trust me, I've had these.
Has that happened to you?
I've had a couple of these over the years. They're wild. They're wild.
Really?
Yeah, I have. They make me cringe.
I can't imagine that happening.
It's been an odd thing. And then there's the other version, which is, harkens back to what we're talking about, which is, I don't know if you will have a vision for something that you would be proud of making that also coincides with the show that the Old Man in the Pool that I'm writing. So like, I think at one point I showed you the photo that Jen had taken and you were like, oh, you could do this, this, and this, and this could be something. And I don't even think that I asked you. I think you had an idea and then I was like, oh, then it gave me permission to ask.
I think that's true. I think we talked about it and then I went in some direction and then you came back with that photo and then it kind of all came together. And I think that's like that's a really good collaboration, right? When you have like kind of some nebulous, loose feeling, not an idea of what it's going to look like, but maybe what it's going to feel like, right? And then I kind of see whatever you have or get a sense of that feeling and then go in my direction. Then we make something that like neither of us would have come up with on our own. That's when it happens well.
I think that's the best case scenario. And I think even like that photo, for example, I think it's good that it wasn't on a sound stage with a swimming pool, and, you know what I mean?
Well,
with lights
like
everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same way. So I think most artists, actually, especially at your level, like would probably want maybe more control over things like that. Mm-hmm. But because you're giving up a lot when you're just using like a snapshot, you know, it's a pretty, for any folks who haven't seen it, I'm sure everybody's seen it by now, but if anybody hasn't, it's a very vulnerable photo. You're just wearing your swim trunks in a pool.
I look great. My world is crashing around me.
Vulnerable is handsome and sexy, Mike. Absolutely. It's a very vulnerable shot that does look like, authentic, right?
It's a human body.
Yeah.
In a vulnerable state.
Floating in the water.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I tried to do a bunch of different styles of lettering. Some were more like watery or bubbly or whatever, but they all looked kind of contrived and it didn't match like the authenticity and vulnerability of the photo.
Yeah.
So it became like really simple.
It's funny because like, so you've drawn for a whole period of time, you were a drawing journalist, an illustrating journalist for the New York Times.
Yeah.
Which someone else does now.
Julia Rothman does it now. She's amazing. She does it with her writing partner, Shayna Feinberg. And so I started it was the first drawn journalism column in the New York Times. Yeah. It was very cool that they're willing to take a big leap with somebody like me.
What's interesting about that to me, partly, is that I don't know if this is the intention of it. I don't. In some ways, when I've read those and looked at your journalistic drawings, it sort of points to the subjectivity of journalism in a certain way.
Say more about that.
Because it's your perspective.
Well, but it's always journalist perspective.
Right,
and
right.
They
had
this whole
is.
Thing. I can go on a spiel.
Sure.
You want a spiel?
Cool. Nope.
Okay.
I want.
You want the spiel?
I got a podcast for you?
Great. Okay. So there is this idea of, I'm going to go deep just for a second. Bear with me. So for a long time, painting was this thing that represented what we wanted reality to be. So like the kings would hire the artist to like put up these portraits. They don't really look like them, but it was the idea of what that person looked like. And that was considered reality, right?
Yeah.
And then photography came along.
Right.
What? And it like then, well, what is painting? If you can actually show what's real, what happens to painting, right? So then all of a sudden they're painting like grids and splotches and splatters and all that stuff, which is great. But painting became something totally different because photography was what's real.
The literal.
But like, it's only in the past, whatever, 25 years from that, people started thinking, well, wait a second. Like, the photographers are choosing, like, what is in and out of the frame.
Yeah.
They're choosing, like, the kind of feeling that the photograph is bringing up. It's totally subjective.
Yeah.
So, but it still kind of tricks you because it's, like, made with this machine and it's in a newspaper and it's kind of the best we can do. So, with drawing, this drawn journalism thing that I do, my goal with it is to just completely embrace the subjectivity.
Yes.
And say that the most honest and real that I can, like, story that I can possibly present is by doing my very best to spend as much time as I can with somebody to get a real sense of who they are, use their own words, and combine that with drawings that are done mostly from life and put those together and tell a story. So when somebody looks at it, they're not seeing, like, a kind of hard machine-made idea of objective reality. They're seeing what Wendy experienced in that moment.
Yeah.
And if you trust me, then that's the most real that it can be.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's interesting the thing you're saying about photography, because that was like a huge revelation when I was in college studying photography and drawing for the first time. Because there's this conception of, I feel like from childhood, I think it's a very child, you know, thing, which is you're the good artist in the class. Like, I remember it was like, you know, I remember like in fourth grade, like there was like a girl in the class who's like, she's the drawer of the class, right?
Yeah.
And then the rest of us were like, we're not the drawers. But the truth is we're all the drawers.
Totally. Did your teacher say anything to,
I don't
do you remember?
So, no, we were never corrected on it. And so I feel like when I got to college, it was my screenwriting professor, this guy, John Glavin, and I was studying screenwriting, like, you know, very intensely. And he goes, you know, what you should really be doing is taking photography classes and drawing classes if you want to make films.
Oh, well.
Because really it's about framing.
Mm.
It's about visual framing. Filmmaking is about visual framing.
And did you take some classes?
And I think my drawing class was the thing that changed the way I looked at all art for the rest of my life.
Really? What do you remember from your classes?
I just remember the concept that, you know, when I see that bottle here on the table, that I draw what I see and not what I imagine a bottle looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so simple of an idea. But once that my eyes were open to that idea, I was like, oh, that applies to everything. That applies to improv. If I initiate a scene where I play a mailman, I don't play what I imagine a mailman would be like. I play it like a person who I've met who very well could be a mailman. So I'm more personally related to the character.
Oh, that's so interesting. I didn't think about that connection at all. Yeah, we did I think the first time that you and I met, we did this drawing exercise that I do with a lot of people when I ask people to look at each other and draw each other for a minute or 2 minutes without looking down at the paper. And that's one of my favorite things to do with people who say they can't draw or they're not drawers or whatever, because that drawing has nothing to do with making a good drawing. And I'd argue most of the best drawing in the world has nothing to do with making a quote-unquote good drawing. It has to do with learning to look and see what's actually in front of us. And when two people do that for a minute or two and they don't look away, which is what we're usually trained to do, it creates this intimacy that I think it's like magical, like magic stuff happens.
Yeah.
After that, we just don't do enough like looking.
And that's what joke writing is too. I mean, it's just looking. It's just paying attention.
How do you notice things when you're like, if I'm going to go get a cup of coffee right now, I'll just walk down the street and I'll get a cup of coffee and I'll come back and I'll probably look at my phone and I won't really notice anything or anybody for that matter. But I do have this like little switch in my brain that I turn and I kind of can and draw together, which is the kids' drawing classes we do. I call it putting on our art eyes.
Mm-hmm.
if I put on my art eyes, like it's this switch and I start noticing things in a really different way and I start framing things. And I guess that's called paying attention.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Is there something like, do you switch between modes like that too? Or are you always on?
Yeah. So like I find that the job of the comedian is just to be, like you're saying, art eyes, being open, listening, paying attention. Like, you know, one of my jokes from a few years ago was like walking into a cafe here. And this woman in front of me in line says to her son, like, Arrow, if I don't get my coffee soon, I am going to die, literally. And I thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
Just the dialogue of that. So I just wrote that in my notebook. I just thought it was funny. Like, I was like, it's not a joke, but it's funny. And then I go home and it's in my notebook. And then I wrote the joke, which is like, what I wanted to say to the woman was like, I don't think that maybe the word literally is the best word for the situation, because if your son thinks that that's what literally means, he might think he's an arrow. And if he is an arrow and he hugs you, you might die literally. And it's so stupid, but it's all just from, like you're
that
saying,
moment.
Art eyes.
Yeah, from your art eyes, you caught it. And so you keep a notebook and you write... No, like you don't write the jokes down.
I piles and piles of the notebooks.
And you carry them in a pocket?
Yeah.
It's the so I carry a sketchbook, right? And that sketchbook, sometimes the drawings that I do in that will end up being a finished drawing. I'll go home and I'll paint it or something like that. But then similar to you, I'll also just take those drawings and those will kind of put them together in a way and they become a final thing. I don't really know many people who make stuff who don't carry around some kind of a little... notebook or something.
It's a tricky moment we're in right now, because when you walk down the street, and I'm guilty of this too, like you just see a ton of people staring at their phone, and that's not where artists come from.
No.
Artists
have you
definitely
ever
don't...
gotten a good idea from looking at Instagram?
No.
You've got
no.
made friends, you know, or like gotten stuff out there, right?
Friends.
But like friends. They like you, right?
Yes, exactly. But you're right. No, I've never gotten a good idea from Instagram or Twitter or something.
No, and yet, like, I do find myself scrolling, thinking, like, maybe if I keep scrolling, I'll hit a good idea, you know? And it just doesn't. No, it only I only find good ideas or draw good things through actually drawing. Shocking, right? But it's hard to switch over to that gear sometimes with this damn machine in the hands.
It's interesting, though, like, the thing you're saying about the exercise of just drawing someone, it is sort of an act of love in a certain way, because you're seeing the person, you're spending time looking and thinking about that person.
Yeah, we say in Draw Together, drawing is looking and looking is loving.
Love that.
Yeah.
Support for Mike Birbiglia's Working It Out comes from Helix Sleep. Helix has been with this podcast from the very beginning. We are huge Helix mattress fans over here. Let me tell you a few things that are great about Helix Sleep mattresses. They are fiberglass free. Unlike other brands, Helix mattresses do not contain fiberglass, which can be harmful to your health. As you may have seen in the news or on social media, there have been a number of health issues and lawsuits related to fiberglass and mattresses. You know, actually, I used to have a mattress that was pure fiberglass. It was literally a bed of fiberglass. No longer. I sleep on Helix mattresses, which are fiberglass free. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/burbigs. That's helixsleep.com/burbigs. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long with Helix. Better sleep starts now. No, now. Working It Out is supported by Squarespace. Squarespace is an all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. I should point out that this is an ad for Squarespace, but I love Squarespace. I was thrilled when they became an advertiser because we've used them for years. Our website for Thank God for Jokes was Squarespace. Our website for Stand Up and Vote was Squarespace. Couldn't recommend it more highly. We use it all the time. Start a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. You can sell exclusive content on your site by adding a paywall to sell memberships or courses, or sell files your customers can download like PDFs, music, or ebooks. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, head to squarespace.com/birbigs, B-I-R-B-I-G-S, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/birbigs to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. What's interesting is, like, you've drawn stuff, like, draw together with kids, and then you've drawn, like, very, like, serious stuff. Like, you drew some of the folks, the detainees at Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
And so those are two very different things.
They are very different things. Although I would argue there's a through line in everything that, drawing a good picture is not very interesting to me. The process of drawing and looking is very interesting to me. Like, that, I feel lucky I get to connect with people through drawing.
Yeah.
And that's all it is for me. Drawing is a way to connect with people.
Yeah.
So whether it be, Guantanamo Bay, that was really intense.
Yeah.
But the opportunity to be there and witness something, because there's no cameras allowed in Guantanamo Bay, right?
So, like, who hired you?
The New York Times.
So they got permission from the military?
Yes. Wow. Do you really want me to tell you about this?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, please.
On a comedy podcast?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about Gitmo.
I think people are smart enough who listen to this podcast to know that it's not all that.
Oh, boy. In Guantanamo Bay, I think I was the fifth artist who'd ever been allowed on base at Guantanamo Bay, and the first that the New York Times had flown out there.
Yeah.
You have to get permission from the military, and I was there to document the war court. I worked with a woman named Carol Rosenberg, who's been there since before they opened, and she is the main reporter for the New York Times, who covers it and makes sure that there's always attention being put on what's happening there and bringing stuff to light. And she wanted to do a story that was kind of about the aesthetics of the courtroom, and specifically, like, It's super weird. Like I was saying before, like, your sweatshirt tells a story, right? In the Guantanamo Bay courtroom, everything everybody wears and how they sit and how they move all tells a story about what's going on politically. It's like a theater. And I hope it's okay for me to be saying all of this.
Yeah, I think so. I've spoken to the president.
Okay, you got permission?
He said it's fine.
Okay, good. So I had to go through and get all of the FBI security clearances and all that kind of stuff. And then went out there with all my pens and my papers and went to the courtroom. This is the craziest thing about drawing in Guantanamo Bay.
Wow, these are stunning.
Okay, so that's...
People have to follow along by going...
Okay.
Just search for Guantanamo Bay and Wendy McNaughton, and you'll see these drawings are incredible.
So the ones you're looking at there, I wrote a piece about what it's like to draw there and the challenges of it. So one of the reasons that this assignment, it was a journalistic assignment, made sense for me is because I draw from life, like, almost exclusively. And so I could sit in the courtroom, but I'm not a sketch artist per se. Like, I really try and capture a moment. Everything that you draw in the observation room of the courtroom has to be finished by the time you leave.
Oh, my gosh. So you can't make changes afterwards.
You can't change anything. It's like literally illegal to change things. Literally. So an officer had to come into the courtroom and look at every drawing that I did and made sure that there was nothing that was not supposed to be included, because there was all these things I was not allowed to draw.
Wow.
Couldn't include any of that stuff. And if it was approved to go out into the world, the person would take a sticker and put it on the drawing and then sign it and say, this drawing has been approved for release by the military.
Wow.
It was the most intense drawing experience I've had. And I would not say that I would love to do it again. Being in Guantanamo Bay for a week was not anything I would really wish on anybody.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that the reporter's there doing what she's doing, and it was a huge honor to be able to do it and to be able to capture these images and share them with people because otherwise they would not be out there.
Right.
So the other hard thing about this, again, this is probably too intense for your podcast, but like the real, real story of this is one of the main instructions I was given is that I was not allowed to make eye contact with anybody in the courtroom.
Oh.
So like KSM, the guy who was kind of the orchestrator of 9/11, he was in there. And I was not allowed, I had to draw him, but I was not allowed to make eye contact with him. And the premise of all of my work is like to humanize people and to bring people, like make a connection between the viewer and the subject. And so I had to, I wasn't allowed to connect with them myself. So it was like an emotionally kind of impossible feat.
So in other words, you couldn't speak with them, but you could look at them.
But they couldn't
look at you?
No, they could look at me and I could look at them. Yeah. But if we made eye contact, I was told to look through them.
Oh my gosh. That's so strange.
It's so strange.
And then you do...
I can't tell you how against everything like in my cells that goes.
Yeah.
But it's like that's the job. And that's why in a way, like I'll say I do journalism, but there is this idea of like this objectivity and being able to look through somebody and just tell the facts. And I think that's a load of crap.
Yeah,
I think it
feels false.
Totally false.
Yeah.
So.
Well, everything, gosh.
I can't believe we just went down a KSM.
No, but I want to zoom out to just art and jokes and comedy and the relationship between all these things for a second, because I want to point out that I talk to young comics and they want advice, and I'm guessing it's the same in the universe of drawing, but I don't know this to be true, is I always say, keep trying to find your voice. Keep trying to find your version of whatever this is. It's like there's going to be 1,000 people's jokes on, you know, the midterm elections, let's say. I don't do political comedy. But what's the one that's you? What's deep inside you in relationship to that?
Because
that's the only thing that's interesting.
Right. I think that's true. That goes back to like the handwriting thing.
Yeah.
So
this is your handwriting.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people ask who are starting off drawing, and I'm sure you get this maybe with comedy and jokes too. People say, well, how do I develop my own style?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, well, first you copy a lot of people.
You sure?
Right?
Yeah.
You just do everything, just riff off of everybody. But then like I ask them, how do you figure out your handwriting? Like, you just did it, right? You just wrote, and you just kept writing and writing and writing, and eventually you created a handwriting that nobody else's handwriting looks like.
That's right.
It's probably the same thing.
Well, my handwriting is projected onto a screen in The Old Man in the Pool, and it is not pretty.
But it's so authentic.
But it's interesting. That's what it is.
It's yours.
And it's human.
Yeah.
And that's what people are showing up for.
Right, that's right. And I think if you had like some font that looked human and was nicely kerned and all of that stuff, it would feel very eerie and not like you.
Yeah.
Right?
But getting back to the college thing. So my college professor told me to take a drawing course. But it's, and it changed the way that I looked at framing. And I just still think about that. You know, if you take, for example, this bottle we're looking at, it's like you could shoot it aerially, and that's a completely unique thing. You could do an ultra, you know, close up of the label, and that's a unique approach. You could
right.
You could do it from a low angle shot and give the bottle power.
Listen to you. I mean, I guess that's the same as like a film, right? Like
film, yeah.
Right. Do you do that with jokes? Like, do you try and come at it from different angles?
Of course, yeah. So you take the same joke and you go like, well, what if I did it, extremely passionately? What if I did it extremely... in a self-deprecating way. What are the different angles of the same story?
And do you do that in advance of a show, or is that part of you doing shows and like working stuff out on stage?
It's all in the draft process. So like, that's why I'm curious about how many drafts you go through for a typical drawing. Obviously the Guantanamo Bay example, you can't do multiple drafts, but typically, like for me, of a typical joke, there would be 5, 10, 15, maybe 20 drafts of the same joke. Of my shows, there's 20, 30, 40, 50 drafts of the same show by the time it reaches people. And I'm just trying to understand the contours of it so that I can deliver something that I'm not trying to be popular, but I am trying to connect with as many people as possible with the thing I'm doing.
Yeah,
which is like an odd. It's a subtle distinction.
No, I get it. I get that distinction because you're trying to go back to what you said, like very much be real from you, right?
Yeah.
If you start trying to be popular, then you're asking what other people want you to do and you start doing that, right? Which you're going to lose, get lost in. But I guess I'm in awe. I work so differently than you in that, like that you go up after you've done all those drafts, then you go on stage and then you're making little tweaks. Like I've seen The Old Man in the Pool 3 times now and it's been 3 different experiences. Like there's just been subtle and a couple dramatic shifts
that
have
big
made
stuff.
Big
yeah.
changes,
yeah.
right?
You saw it in Berkeley, Los Angeles, and then in New York.
Right. And so the Berkeley one had a totally different ending,
yep.
right? And
yep.
then both Los Angeles and now New York has this, I'm not going to say anything about it, but it's like really powerful.
And part of that, by the way, was in Berkeley, the change of the ending was based on a note that Pete Docter gave us. Pete Docter, head of Pixar, director of Up and Inside Out. Basically, sometimes to grill our artistic friends, we'll say, because they'll go, great show.
Yeah.
And then we'll say to them, like, what do you say to your partner on the ride home?
That's such a good question.
What do you say? Like, it was good, but there's one thing. And we try to get to that.
Yeah.
But what's the but? What's the thing that's like nagging at you?
And do people want to share that with you?
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. Over the years, there have been a handful of instances where I've asked people I admire, like, what's the but? You know, because I'm... And you know the other trick I ask people is, were you ever confused? And sometimes what they're quote-unquote confused about is actually what they don't like. But they're not going to say they don't like it because they're your friend.
Right. That's smart.
Pete Docter had said this thing about the ending, which is that there was a version of the ending where he was like, you're kind of telling us. The whole show is a story, a story, a story. We're with you, we're with you, we're with you. And now I'm going to tell you something.
And it becomes like about the thing instead of the thing.
Yeah.
And
so then it stops being a story and it starts to be, oh, he brought us here to tell us a thing as opposed to us arriving at something emotionally on our own.
I'm very in awe of what you do. It's really so different. The process, like I'm way too much a perfectionist to be able to do the process of what you do. If there is an equivalent in drawing, and there is like people who do sketches, and then they do a painting.
Yeah.
That would be the equivalent, I guess.
Right.
Especially if you're doing oil painting, because then when you do the oil painting, you can erase everything and keep going. But I used to paint in oils, and I am a perfectionist, which meant that I kept changing it and changing it and changing it until it was like a muddy mess. Just lost track of the whole feeling and why I was doing it in the first place. That's part of the reasons why I use watercolors and only draw with pen. You can't erase a pen and you can't redo a watercolor. You just keep going, right? If you mess up a watercolor, you either got to change your tack and work with it or crumple it up and throw it away and start over. So it keeps me in the moment. It keeps me like, keeps the energy of whatever I'm trying to draw, whether that be from something I'm observing, which it usually is, or something that's coming from inside. Like, it's really present right there, and I can't overthink it.
Yeah.
I guess we, like, figure out mediums that support our own neuroses or whatever they are.
Right.
Right? Yeah, but if I had the opportunity to redo and redo and redo things, I think I'd, like, drive it into the ground. But you managed to, like, make it better and better and better and better.
But you did like the cover of the new one and you sent me a thing that is framed in our, in me and Jenny's kitchen, which is the various like, the different paint colors on the side that was the color palette.
Yeah.
And then part of the cover painted, but I'm like, well, what which part of that is that mid process? No, because that's the actual.
No, I think that was pretty much thing. It. I think what I sent you, I think maybe we laid in a background color or something like that. But no, I sent you like the art. So
that's the master.
We did some
sketch. That's the master drawing.
Yeah, that's it. That's that's the finished final drawing. Yeah.
Wow.
We did some sketches though. Remember that I was like on the road and in the back of
yes.
a. Back
you were living in your
mobile studio.
Sort of living in your mobile studio car thing.
Nice
which
way
is,
of saying living in my car. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've been in this car when I was in Berkeley. You showed me this car. I rode in this car with you. It's a car that you created. This is extraordinary. We have to post this on Instagram so people understand what I mean. Wendy's at Wendy Mac, at Wendy Mac, and I'm at Epper Biggs, but we'll post this. It's like you created a essentially almost like a drawing work studio kind of easel situation in your trunk of your car.
Well,
is that anything like what it is?
Yeah, it is. It's a really good close.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a Honda Element. I'll have you know,
wow.
Not just any car.
Sponsored.
But yeah, please. I'm waiting.
Oh, you're waiting for them.
I'm waiting for them.
Come on, Honda Element.
Yeah, Honda. It's,
come
this is
on.
All. Also, they stopped making them.
Oh,
so
they did?
If they decide to relaunch them, which I hear they might do,
oh,
and if they do plan on doing that, they'll need somebody.
Heads up, Honda Element.
I worked with a woodworker to totally remove the interior of the back of the car, like rip out all the plastic,
wow.
And then build out an art studio in the back where I can both draw, paint, and sleep. It's tight. It's cozy, but it's good. I love it.
So you sleep in it?
I do. Yeah. And you've seen it. It's not luxurious.
Well, it's not huge.
It's not huge. And I am not that petite. So it is, it's cozy.
Where's a safe... I mean, I've slept in my car a handful of times. I've had a long career. Wasn't always going so well.
Hotel on wheels.
Well,
it
yeah,
is.
Early in my career, I did have a handful of times where I slept in my car.
Of course.
But where do you do it so it's safe?
I've slept in truck stops. I've slept on the side of the road. I've slept in parking lots.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. But you know what? It sounds really gutsy, but I have this thing called like a lock.
Right.
I just
a lock,
lock
sure.
My door.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then
I get
I'm
it.
Locked inside. And I have these like little special windows I put up so you can't see, and it's all like blackout windows.
Okay. That's
people
good.
Can't see into
oh, very
it.
Good. Very
I
good.
Sleep a little knife next to me. You know,
oh my
where
gosh,
I'm totally
really?
Safe. Yeah, it's good.
Have you had to use the knife?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Support for Working It Out comes from Aura Frames. Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? This is the perfect thing. Aura Frames. It's like a Wi-Fi connected digital picture frame. Jenny and I have these at our apartment. We love them. Super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. I can't say enough about these Aura Frames. So we got them and we loaded up a bunch of photos of like our daughter when she was little and at different stages of development or at different ages, us going to the beach and just vacations and all these kinds of things over the years. And then it just flips to the next photo and the next photo, like every, you know, whatever you put it at, 5 seconds, 10 seconds. And it's wonderful. And it just kind of warms up a room. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code WIO at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Working It Out is supported by Squarespace. Squarespace is an all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. I should point out that this is an ad for Squarespace, but I love Squarespace. I was thrilled when they became an advertiser because we've used them for years. Our website for Thank God for Jokes was Squarespace. Our website for Stand Up and Vote was Squarespace. Couldn't recommend it more highly. We use it all the time. Start a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. You can sell exclusive content on your site by adding a paywall to sell memberships or courses, or sell files your customers can download like PDFs, music, or ebooks. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, head to squarespace.com/birbigs, B-I-R-B-I-G-S, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/birbigs to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. All right, so these are some slow round questions. What do you find the hardest to represent graphically?
Here's the thing. Nothing is hard to draw if you don't mind doing a shitty job at it. Mm. Like if you're trying to do it right, everything's hard to draw. Mm. But if you give that up and do the trick of like drawing without looking down or something like that, you can pretty much draw anything. And I don't, I do draw like that a lot, like without looking down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you the kid growing up who was like, she's the good drawer in the class?
I was.
You were, yeah.
I was. Right. For a little while until I went to art school, and then I became like not the good kid. That's super hard.
Interesting.
Yeah. When you go from being like I remember in high school, like the drawing I did of, you know, Dr. Zeus or whatever got onto the t-shirt and I won $150 and it was like the biggest thing ever. And then I thought, yeah, I can be a professional artist. And then I went to art school and I was bottom of the heap. Everybody else had, oh my God. And then I stopped drawing for 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't have to go there.
After art school?
During art school.
Really?
Remember that thing I said about being a perfectionist? The thing that goes along with being a perfectionist is being really hard on yourself and not giving your, like, if you're not the best or doing the best thing, then you quit. It sucks. And I quit drawing and then started 10 years
later. This is huge. This is huge. So the people who are listening to this or watching this who are perfectionists who have stopped, how do you start again?
That's a really good question. Do you think people, I think probably a lot of people listening does that.
Everybody.
Because like,
I know so many people who are great, great artists and writers who are perfectionists and then they stop doing it.
Why?
I think it's the most common thing. Why do they do it?
Because they get a knock. No, they get some kind of a knock, right?
Yeah, they feel like they can't execute the thing that's in their head as well as they want it to.
I know, but of course, because they do have these big ideas and the only way to do it is to like keep doing it, right? But it's really hard to stick with when you're doing the shitty stuff.
What's the answer? What's the answer? What's the solution?
Keep doing it.
Yeah, I know.
Keep making crappy stuff.
I know.
Like, that's it. And also, like, other trick is keep putting it out there so that everything, like, I think you do this really well because you're always putting stuff out there. It almost devalues it a little bit. I'm not saying your work is invaluable. It's so valuable. But when you're putting out that much, you can't be as precious with everything.
Here's another way to look at it too. Like, I know a lot of filmmakers like this. They don't make another, they make one film, they don't make another one because they're going to fuck it up or whatever.
Especially if that first film did really well.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
It's a very common thing. The people who we admire, you know, the Robert Altmans of the world, the Orson Welleses of the world, the stuff that we admire, they think they fucked it up.
Right?
No. If Robert Altman were alive, he'd go, I fucked up Nashville.
Oh, my God.
Here's what's wrong with it.
Oh, God. Right? Can you imagine? And the other thing is we don't see what is in his head.
Yeah.
We see what's on the screen.
Exactly.
And our bar is here, low. His bar is up above the ceiling.
Yeah.
And he ends up getting it somewhere in the middle. So we're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
But we don't see this stuff. Right? In between.
You don't, you only see you're only privy to the final draft.
Right.
And then you just assume that was the first draft because your brain does a mental trick that makes it just jump onto the screen.
Right.
As Quentin, you know, it's Quentin Tarantino's, that's not Quentin Tarantino's first cut.
Yeah.
That you're watching. That's Pulp Fiction draft 15.
Yeah, and nobody sees the other 14 or the things that Quentin is upset that didn't get in the movie that he wanted.
Sure.
Yeah, so we're all just probably really, really hard on ourselves. What do we do about it?
We can make mistakes over and over again.
Over and over again.
And then we release the mistakes.
Yeah.
That's the hard thing. You got to release the mistakes. I know there's things wrong with my movies and my shows. I know that. I can see the flaws.
Yeah.
It's painful. Some nights I'm on stage, middle of the show.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't as good as it could be. That's my inner monologue. Yeah.
What do you do when that happens?
I just try to find it. Find the most inspired version within the constraints of the words that I have.
Mm-hmm. And then how do you switch your feeling inside? You just keep going?
I find that from the audience. The audience gives me the energy. So if they're laughing at something, that lights me up because I love it when people laugh.
Yeah.
What's a nickname that you've had in your life that's either good or bad?
Oh, wow. McNaughty.
McNaughty, that's hilarious.
Yeah. let's just leave it at that.
I like McNaughty. That's both good and bad. What is your earliest memory?
I remember standing up in my crib looking out the window at San Francisco.
Oh my gosh.
I remember, and I remember the door opening, and I wasn't supposed to be standing up in my crib.
Oh.
That's what I remember. I've also seen a photo of that, so I don't know if I remember it or not.
If it's real.
But I choose to remember that.
What's the thing that you crave most in art or film or television or any art you're enjoying? What do you crave most in it? Is there a quality that's consistent or a theme?
I don't like things that take themselves too seriously.
Mm.
I don't have much of a tolerance for that. So I guess the positive way of saying that would be that I like things that are a bit humorous and a bit like light and might be able to look at something that might be real challenging or something like that, but do it with like a little bit of humanity and levity.
What's the best piece of advice that you've been given that you used?
One is, like being a perfectionist, I can work on things forever, mm-hmm. right? And so if you told me like, I remember I was given an assignment to do a story. I'm like, but I'm going to need a month to do the story well. And my editor was like, yeah, but you only have 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, but I need a month. He's like, well, why don't you see what mm-hmm. you can do in 2 days?
Mm-hmm.
And that changed my whole frame of like this idea, seeing things what it could be
mm-hmm.
versus like working with the restrictions mm-hmm. of what are, and things end up working out really well when we give like really intense restrictions, I think, to work.
We had another thing called Working It Out for a Cause where we contribute to a nonprofit of your choice.
Yeah.
And we try to, we link to them in the show notes. So who do you think is an organization that does a great job?
Wow, I've heard of this thing called Draw Together, but I'm not going to do that.
No, that's what you should do.
No, I don't want to. That's not okay.
Okay.
I am going to say that Draw Together is a great thing to support.
Yes.
And what I would like to support with this, though, is a great organization called Girls Garage that is out in the East Bay, in the Bay Area, and they teach girls how to use tools and build things and gain a lot of confidence and be pretty awesome.
Girlsgarage.org.
Yeah.
This looks so cool.
It's so cool.
Even just going on their site.
Yeah. Like, their motto is fear less, build more. And they teach girls to like, you know, build bus stops and tables, and they go and do it for nonprofits.
I mean,
yeah.
This is fantastic.
It's cool. Founded by Emily Pilotin, the best.
Sometimes you get so down about the state of the world and the country and all these things. And then you see like an organization like this, Girls Garage, or Draw Together, and you just go, oh, there's people doing super positive things, and we should support those things. Thank you, Wendy McNaughton, for being my friend and my collaborator and someone I admire.
Right back at you, Mike Birbiglia. This has been super fun. Thanks for having me on.
Working it out, because it's not done. We're working it out, because there's no... That's going to do it for another episode of Working It Out. That's Wendy McNaughton. I couldn't recommend more highly following Wendy McNaughton on Instagram, at Wendy Mac. She's just a fantastic artist. You should visit drawtogether.studio. which has these great videos and is a great nonprofit organization supporting art in schools. Also, look out for, we didn't talk about it today, in July, she has a book called How to Say Goodbye that is gorgeous. It's about coming to grips with people who you love dying and sort of coming, you know, dealing with that. And it's gorgeous. She actually sent me a version of it once when Jen and I were going through something, and it really brought me to tears and it was very cathartic. So look out for that. I think you can pre-order that now. Our producers of Working It Out are myself, along with Joseph Birbiglia and Peter Salamone, associate producer Mabel Lewis, consulting producer Seth Barish, assistant producers Gary Simons and Lucy Jones, sound mix by Kate Belinsky. Special thanks to Marissa Hurwitz and Josh Upfall. My consiglieres, Mike Bergowitz. Special thanks to Jack Antonoff and Bleachers for their music. Jack just got nominated for Producer of the Year, Grammy, again, running up the score on all the other music producers. Special thanks, as always, to my wife, the poet J. Hope Stein. Her book is called Little Astronauts, in your local bookstore right now. Special thanks, as always, to my daughter, Una, who created the original Radio Fort made of pillows. Thanks most of all to you who are listening. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. I can see you telling your friends and enemies, by the way, on the Apple Podcast. I read all those. They help. If you have 3 minutes this holiday season, I think that needs to be a message in the holiday season. Go on Apple Podcasts, just write, here's my favorite episode of this. And then we can get some of the friends and enemies to show up to the podcast. And enemies can be anywhere, really. I mean, maybe you run into one of your enemies at one of Wendy's draw together online classes, and you can say, hey, if you're enjoying Wendy's drawing class so much, maybe you'd enjoy an episode of a podcast she was a guest on called Mike Birbiglia's Working It Out. It's where creatives get together and chat about process. And Wendy will be like, get back to drawing. She doesn't really talk like that. Thanks, everybody. We're working it out. We'll see you next time.